this is London Marathon, you're on the elite start, it almost wasn't an option to stop. Obviously, it did cross my mind thinking that that was an easy option, just to stop and call it quits, but I would never live it down. And I kind of thought, we've had such a great week, such a great build-up, I kind of didn't want to end it.
This is Running For Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running For Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Running For Real podcast, episode number 127. Last week, we had Angelo Poli on the show, who was uncovering the mysteries of the metabolism and how you can actually kind of hack it by understanding how it works. I hope for those of you who do struggle with my eat what you want when you want method, you feel that this was more helpful for you. I know many of you have felt frustrated with my kind of explanation of that, and I hope this helps you find a place you feel comfortable with your body. And that was a great alternative to try it. MetPro is a wonderful product, and I hope you give it a thought here. Today, I have a coach and athlete who were thrown into the limelight after the London Marathon. I know the Big Ben runner trying to get under the finish line was the story for many of you, but I'm sure you saw about Hayley Caruthers, the elite runner who crawled across the finish line of the London Marathon after falling down a few feet away from the finish. But there's actually a lot more to Hayley's story than that, although we do go into that part as well. Hayley's story is pretty fascinating in itself. She only started running, as in her first 5K ever run, not a race, but literally a run, in 2016. And from there, she has ended up with a sub-16-minute 5K on a park run, may I add, 71 minutes in the half and 2:33 in the marathon, yes, including her crawling across the finish line. And she's still working full-time as a radiographer. Pretty amazing, and she suggested that we bring her coach, Dan, on with her. And I thought that was a good idea, not just because he's been working with one of our previous guests, Andy Lane, but also as I kind of wanted to grill him a little to see how he's making sure that Hayley is protected, how he's stopping her or himself from kind of getting carried away with this exciting new talent. As you can imagine, it would be really easy and tempting to do it with someone that fast. Before we go meet these two, let's first send out a huge thank you to MetPro, Athletic Greens, and Body Health. Thank you to Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. I have loved how easily this has slotted straight into my routine, so much so that on the odd few days I've missed it, I have really missed it and not felt quite right without it. It is as simple as you get a glass or shaker, fill it with water. I like about 14 ounces because I like to get that glass of water in before the day begins. But you can also kind of do it as like a shot if you prefer and just doing a little less water. You get a scoop of Athletic Greens, put it into your drink, give it a shake or a stir, and there you are. You are ready. Drink it down. You get 75 carefully selected ingredients to cover the five important areas of health. You will get your prebiotics, you will get your probiotics, you will get your vitamins and minerals, all of it. It is just going to be a wonderful way for you to start your day. So if it's a busy time for you, if you're chasing around kids, if your career is kind of taking off a little bit, this is a perfect way to make sure you are getting the nutrition you need, the nutrition you deserve, even if your food choices are maybe not quite perfect at this time. Go to athleticgreens.com/Tina to get a $79 value travel pack. It will come with 20 servings of Athletic Greens that you can take with you, the nice easy to open sachets, and you can then take them on the go, which is ideal with it being summer coming where people are going to take vacations all over the place. Go to athleticgreens.com/Tina. Go get yourself some. You will love it. Hayley, Dan, welcome to the Running For Real podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited to get into this conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. And now, you're both obviously in the UK. I think even your just hellos would have given that away. But many of my listeners may not even, you know kind of how much of a whirlwind your story has been, Hayley, because I did see some stuff going, you know, a bit viral over here, but
Honestly, the Big Ben getting stuck at the finish line seemed to be the thing that over here was kind of taking the attention. So I want to kind of go into that. We're going to talk about that for a minute. But even before your whole London experience kind of happened, which we're going to talk about, I had people recommending you to me years ago, and you actually reached out to me probably about a year ago, and I didn't put it together and that it was you until just recently. But I want to firstly start with the fact that we'll go into the story later, but you were just ran a 2:33 marathon in London, and you only started running 3 years ago, which was in 2016. And from what I got, you were inspired by a colleague who used to run a 5K after work. So, you know, how did that come about? Was it just you seeing her going out there every day and thinking that sounds fun? Or did you run in school? Like, how did you kind of get going in the first place?
Yeah. So I say she more so much inspired me in a way that I thought the competitive element in me thought, oh, I could do that. If she can do it, then I can give it a go. So in school, I obviously competed in sports day, but I was never a standout athlete or a runner.
So even in cross country, you weren't at the front of the class or anything?
No, I'd never even heard of it until I didn't know what XC stood for until about 2 years ago.
Wow.
But so watching that now and thinking of, well, I've done one cross country event now and I absolutely loved it. Mm. So maybe one day I'll kind of touch on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember when I was younger, my mum said to me that I cried after a 400 meter race in sports day because it was too far and then ended up being a marathon runner. So I'm not sure what happened in between then. But
so did you just start running with the friend saying, I'm going to go join you, and then just kind of thought, actually, this is fun, I want to keep going? Like, where did it go from there?
So no, I went out on my own. I just ran a mile. I didn't even have running trainers. And then it was really hard, but there was something about it that made me feel free and made me feel almost complete. And then since then, I kind of just upped the distance gradually, signed up for a half marathon in the October of 2016. And then thought, prior to a half marathon, I probably should do some sort of other race. And so I signed up for a 10K just before that, just to kind of get used to a whole race build up and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I did that, just a local one. I wanted to break 45 minutes for the 10K. And ran 43.
Still pretty quick, yeah, for a new runner.
Yeah, I was really surprised. Yeah. And I came ninth woman, and wow, I was absolutely over the moon. And my parents were like, this is so amazing.
Was that the first moment that you thought, wow, actually, maybe I have something here?
No, not even then, really. I just really, really enjoyed it. And as soon as I did probably my second half marathon, and that was in 2018, that was when I kind of thought that I was all right with it.
What time did you run for that one?
79 minutes.
Okay. Okay. I couldn't remember that one. That was my first half marathon PB as well, but I had a lot more years of running behind me when you did that. Okay. So then, you know, running a 79 minutes, definitely a time where, you know, you're starting to turn a bit of heads there. And you started working with a coach from your local club. But then, you know, you transitioned, you know, I've mentioned Dan is here on the show with us. You know, how did you two find one another? I know myself, but I think it's a pretty cool story. So I'd like for you to, Dan, maybe you could share that with us. Like, was there something about Hayley that caught your eye, or what was it?
No, I was given very little choice in the whole matter. I was standing on the start line of our local park run, and somebody said to me, somebody shouted out, will someone pay 16:45? And I looked around and said, yeah, no problem. And was introduced to Hayley at that point. So, yeah, that was it really. I messed it up though, because she ran 16:46. So I suppose at that point I was, yeah. So that's how we met. And then shortly after that, yeah, she'd gone to Toronto to run for England and came back, and we had a chat about starting to work together from there really.
So you paced her in this park run. So you didn't know going into it, wasn't like, oh, there's this girl that's, you know, in our local town and she's starting to get really good. Like, it wasn't like, you know, people were kind of, you know, doing the whisper thing. It was just literally someone yelling out and you.
Yeah, I mean, and I am a geek as well. So if there had been that sort of chat, I would have heard it, I'm sure. But no, it was just a mate who I know from sort of training runs, just shouted out and then saw me there and said, oh, Dan will do it. And yeah, so obviously I did, and that was it. Mm-hmm. She was lumbered, or I was.
Yeah. Did she tell you a bit of her story then, like where she'd kind of come from, that she'd just started, or was it just literally you did the race and then you parted ways for a little while?
No. Well, actually, we spent a bit of time together later that day and had a bit of a chat. But I don't think at that point there was ever really any discussion about coaching at that stage. It wasn't for a few weeks later. But I mean, obviously she was very good. I mean, you don't often get women rocking up to the local park run running 1640 odd as a matter of course. So it was, I mean, it was obviously an unusual thing to have happened, and it struck me that she was clearly very good. But then, you know, she was not that long away from going to run for England in Toronto. So then it became fairly obvious why she was so good. So.
Mm-hmm. And what race was it, Hayley, that had you qualify for the Toronto representing England? Like, did they take you off the half marathon or?
It was kind of a combination between the London Marathon 2018.
Which and then you had run what time?
2:47.
Okay.
And then the Vitality 10K, which we're doing next week.
Okay.
And that was kind of the England qualification time as well. So I think it was a joint decision between those two.
Mm-hmm. And what were your thoughts when you got selected for an England team? Was that kind of a... I guess I'm interested because for me, when I started taking running seriously around 14, running for my country became the be all end all. And I'm sure you, having listened to my podcast, have heard me go on and on about this because it literally was my dream. But for you kind of coming in, was that something that you thought, wow, this is a big deal? Or was it just a case of, oh, that's cool?
It was really strange because, I say, a few of my friends said early in the year, oh, you'll run for England one day and maybe GB one day. And I kind of thought, oh, yeah, as you do, you just kind of shake it off because you don't really see yourself as, I don't really see myself as, saw myself as a good runner at that point. I kind of thought, oh, everyone's just kind of being really nice. And I remember getting the email and thinking, what? Literally, there was no words. And I think the emotion for that whole week was just absolutely insane. And it felt like such an honor to be able to run for my country. But it never really sunk in, I don't think, until we were on the flight out there and we were all in our England kit and waiting at London Heathrow and just thinking, oh, gosh, this is actually happening. Mm-hmm. And I think because it was all so new to me, the nerves didn't really sink in at all until race morning because there was so much going on and like press conferences and interviews and the expo and things like that in Canada. And I'd never been to Canada before either. Mm-hmm. So it was just all such an experience. And I kind of thought, well, even if this is my only chance to run for England, I'm going to enjoy it much. And it's because you never know what's around the corner. And I kind of thought to myself, I can't even see myself getting there at the minute, but at least I've had the opportunity. And then it's just taking every day as it comes. And even now I look back and think it was probably one of the best weeks ever. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And I totally get what you're saying there because I remember my experience as well. But all right. So then, you know, you run this race in 2018. What is the name of the sponsor? Totio or something?
Scotiabank.
Yeah, I
can't remember. Toronto Waterfront Marathon.
Yeah, that was it. I knew it was in Toronto. That was all I knew. So you did that. You two kind of, you know, spoke maybe about Dan, you coaching Hayley. You know, I'm assuming if you say you are a bit of a running geek, you'd kind of researched a bit about how she'd kind of skyrocketed. But once you did start working with her, what were your like thoughts of Hayley? Like, where did you think immediately, wow, this is something special? You know, I'm assuming you've coached other people. Maybe let me know either way. But did you see something like, wow, this is something special here?
Difficult when she's sitting next to me to I suppose I thought two things when she first asked me about it. One was that it was a massive responsibility because she clearly has a lot of ability, and whether you get into the argument around talent versus ability and whether that exists or not, but she clearly had a lot of ability and it was also obviously someone who worked very hard. So it felt like a huge responsibility to say yes to. And I guess the second bit was the most important thing to me was that she'd got to where she got to by being happy and healthy and not overthinking things. And it was important that we retained as much of that as possible, really. And then it didn't suddenly become this overly serious, overly complicated process. You know, the most important thing to me still is, always will be, that Hayley was going to be healthy, happy, and enjoy what she was doing. And then whatever achievements come out of that, they're fantastic, obviously, and we're, you know, really determined to go after things. But I suppose my initial thoughts were almost protective, like, you've got this ability, but you've got this super happy person that I really liked, and I wanted to make sure that going into running more seriously didn't change that.
Thank you to Body Health for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. This longtime supporter of me and Running For Real has allowed me to feel good on my run for years, as Perfect Amino contains the 8 essential amino acids that the body needs to support and maintain its muscular, skeletal, enzymatic, that is such a hard word to say, and hormonal systems. The essential amino acids in Perfect Amino are in the exact proportions needed for maximum utilization by our body. What does that mean, you're wondering? Perfect Amino is an amino acid supplement that is 99% utilized by the body to make protein, whereas protein in meat or eggs might be utilized by up to 50%. Quite a big difference there. If you're still confused, you can find out more information by visiting tinamuir.com/aminos to learn more, and also get 10% off your order of everything on the Body Health website. And they have a lot of awesome products for a healthy and sound body, especially if you're coming at health from a holistic standpoint and that's really important to you. They have a lot of stuff I think you might be interested in. Now back to Perfect Amino. It absorbs quickly and you can just get on with your day knowing that you have got this recovery process going. You can get 10% off your order by visiting tinamuir.com/aminos. That's tinamuir.com/aminos. And thank you so much for showing Body Health. We appreciate them by your order.
The most important thing to me still is, always will be, that Hayley was going to be healthy, happy, and enjoy what she was doing. And then whatever achievements come out of that, they're fantastic, obviously, and we're, you know, really determined to go after things. But I suppose my initial thoughts were almost protective, like, you've got this ability, but you've got this super happy person that I really liked, and I wanted to make sure that going into running more seriously didn't change that.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. And I think a lot of, I particularly see it in England more so even than here. You can come across some people who may kind of see that as like, oh, here we go, got a good one. And then, you know, kind of basically burn that person out very quickly. So that's amazing that you had that kind of recognition straight away. And I'm assuming a lot of that is because you know, what you have been able to achieve yourself. So tell us a bit about you, Dan, before we go on, you know, your own running.
Not to be too silly about it, I'm a decent club runner. So I've run 2:29 for the marathon, 69 for the half, 31 low for 10K. So a decent club runner, but, you know, nothing, just about fast enough to still run with Hayley.
I was going to say, is there now a thing she's going for your PBs?
she'll be way in
advance.
That's
her next goal, right?
Yeah, definitely.
They're the only goals. Beat Dan.
I love that. Okay, so then, Dan, I want to just kind of dig into this a little more with you. For after that, you know, what did you decide was the plan? Like, how were you going to keep Hayley kind of enjoying it and keep that sense of fun? Because it's very easy once you kind of reach that point where you say, I really want to kind of commit to this, to let it kind of, I know myself, as you know, my husband is my coach, it's easy for me to say, but I want to do more. And I'm assuming Hayley kind of coming to you with that same thing. So how did you keep your plan of what you wanted for her when I'm sure a part of you is getting excited as she was kind of working her way through the ranks?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that you're accurate there in that my number one thought was that I, you know, my job, first of all, was not to get carried away and not to chase things too quickly and to make sure that we were being patient, because, you know, it's very easy to get excited and very easy to overreach. And obviously Hayley didn't have a background as a runner. What she did have was a lot of good conditioning and a lot of strength. And that was, you know, a good place to start. But I mean, the first thing we did was we went for a DEXA scan. We got some movement screening. We went and spoke to an S&C coach. We did all those things to make sure that we were starting from a good place. And all the way through the first marathon build up, Hayley was probably pushing me to do more. X and Y runner runs this many miles a week or whatever. I'm saying, yes, but they've been running for 10 years and, you've got to run for 10 more years or you've got to at least have that option available to you. So we want to, not overreach this time. And that's difficult, right? Because you're invited to be on the elite field at London Marathon. Mm-hmm. There's this great prize there of qualifying for the World Championships and all that stuff. And you want to go for that, of course, because, you do never know that you're going to have another chance. But equally, you've got to balance that up against being sensible and thinking about the long-term interests of the athlete. So, ultimately, the thing I thought was, well, how do we make sure that she really enjoys this build-up, given that she's going to be pushed a little bit harder than she had been previously? And hopefully, she'll be able to tell you better than me, but hopefully we achieve that.
Mm-hmm. And so what were some of the practices you had within that? Was it making sure workouts were kind of had a fun element to it, kind of making sure you guys stayed lighthearted? Hayley, you might have some thoughts on what you kind of experienced.
Yeah, so we always kept it really fun and everything was always interchangeable. So say, for example, if I'd messaged Dan that day saying, I'm really not feeling tonight's session, Dan's first response will be, just show up anyway and we'll just do what you can. So it immediately alleviated all of the pressure and the pressure of hitting splits and things like that. And we kind of take all of that off and we deal with what we have on a given day, because that's all you can do. You can perform your best on one training session, on one race day. And it's kind of, I think that's what's made me enjoy it so much, because during the training, I've got a lot better at trying to take the pressure off myself. So because you can't run your best mile reps after 2 days after doing a fast track session and I think it's only taken it's taken a few months for me to even get my head around the fact that I can't feel brilliant every day. And and it's kind of, everyone always thinks that you get faster by because it's easy because every day is just you're ticking boxes, and the majority of the time it's a lot more difficult than so. The good days are very few and far between, and the difficult days are the ones where you can make that progress to overcome things that you once thought weren't possible. And it's just, I enjoy every day, and every session there's something to learn from. And still, all the long runs we just use to catch up on things from the week, and it's just been really enjoyable. And I've even started to enjoy my running even more, which I didn't think was possible, but
that's so good.
I think one of the advantages you've got with, working with female runners is that the decent male club runners are training partners, ready-made. So we've been able to drop in and out of groups as well to mix things up, which is, it's good to just be in a different environment every now and again. And just, we're lucky around here. There's lots of decent groups that we can jump into. And that's really helped as well. We did do a lot of training, just the two of us, where Hayley would be staring at the back of my head for rep after rep, which is can't have been the most pleasant experience for her. But we tried to mix that up as well. And just so the social aspect was there as well. She's meeting different people and the usual sort of banter. She coped quite well with that kind of group of guys who might be taking the mickey out of each other or whatever. She holds her own very well in that environment. So I think that helped as well.
For sure. All right. So I want to ask you, Dan, just one more thing before we get on to London here. Even with kind of this mindset that you've made very clear that you had in mind and wanting to be careful with it, wanting to keep it fun, no matter what way you look at it, going from starting running in 2016 to an elite marathoner in 2019, that's a pretty hefty, quick build up, no matter what way you took it. So how did you prepare her body physically to be able to go from basically zero to, running, I don't know how many miles a week you run, Hayley, but even just kind of a 20-mile long run, a marathon, that's quite a lot to be able to even just accomplish that, let alone be running it at speed. So what kind of things did you, have her do, or what did you keep in mind with that? You've already mentioned about the mileage, kind of keep not comparing, but what else?
I suppose for me, the challenge was that you're trying to go into the first build-up and you know, we'd only been working together for a couple of months before we really had to start thinking about that marathon cycle. Mm-hmm. And during that time, we'd been working a little bit on just some shorter distance stuff, just because that was something Hayley hadn't really touched on previously. So I suppose it was a matter of being really flexible. I mean, we spoke a lot. We would speak several times a day. And just being ultra responsive, and I was learning, you know, even in the first few weeks, I was constantly learning about her as an athlete, how she responded to things, what her level of fatigue would be like after a particular kind of run. But if I'm really honest, the thing that struck me most was that the longer stuff and the kind of marathon pace work was the stuff she would just eat up, and it was almost a matter of holding that back rather than, okay. I mean, Hayley would confirm, I think I stopped her long runs almost always before she wanted to. So we'd be out and doing 20, 22, and I'd think, well, that's enough. And the advantage is that I'm running right there next to her, so I can gauge these things and I know exactly what else we've done in the week and so on. But most of the time she was saying, no, I want to push on, I'm feeling really good. So it was just a matter of, wow, she's got this real aptitude for running long and finishing those sessions strongly. And, you know, obviously did all the other things that you do. We did physiology testing, because that's something I do at University of Wolverhampton as well. So we got all that data to help us out as well. But, yeah, I mean, she's just a massive diesel engine that can go a long way pretty fast.
That's great. And, yeah, it's been exciting to kind of see it. And Hayley, I would like you now to kind of tell us, for people that don't know, I've been kind of teasing this all along, but what made you the center of attention, definitely in the UK, but maybe even the running world, for a few days just after the London Marathon? What was it that happened?
I dressed up as Big Ben, actually. No. Unfortunately, I made a bit of a scene of myself on national television and collapsed with my legs just gave way 2 meters before the finish line on London Marathon. Believe it or not. And I think I keep thinking to myself that I was surprised I even made it that far by the state I was in from about maybe halfway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's been some cracking photos. So
the photos are awesome. And I'm sure now I've said that, people will be like, oh yeah, I remember seeing that. So I want to get into this a little bit more, because I've actually done that twice. I've crawled across the finish line and I've pushed myself in a marathon so far. I didn't crawl, but I seeing you at the as you were coming down, I was like, oh no, I know that. Like I understand it, but for a lot of people listening, it's hard to wrap their brain around how you could get to that point. So, you know, let's, Dan, start with you. Going into this, what were you thinking? You know, Hayley had run 71 minutes and a half a few months. Was it 71 or 70?
Yeah,
71. A few months prior. So you knew she was ready for a big breakthrough, but I'm guessing that wasn't the plan. So what was the plan going into this race?
The plan was pretty simple. You'll know from having done London, that, you know, we went to the pacemakers meeting and, you know, there was a group, and it seemed like all the British women were jumping on the one group, with the exception of maybe Charlotte.
Which pace was that?
2:28.
Okay.
Which made sense. You know, there's an Olympic marathon standard, which we're in the window for. Mm-hmm. So I think that came into it as well, even though the world championship standard was 2:31. And almost everyone seemed to be going in the 2:28 group. And I was actually really comfortable with that. And I still am, actually, which we can come back to. I thought that was absolutely fine. And you know what? We were there to try and qualify. So once you know, you recognise that Charlotte Purdue's in shape to go quite a lot faster than that, you know, there were three athletes at least who'd been to multiple major championships who were all going in that group. Mm-hmm. It's a very big call to let all three of those go up the road and, you know, assume that all three of them are going to come back, although they did on the day because of the way it played out. But I think with the information we had at the time and without the benefit of hindsight, I was really comfortable with our race plan, which was to basically sit at the back of that group and not put your nose into the wind once and just be the newbie that was kind of enjoying the experience and hanging on. But the way it turned out, that group went through 5K at 2:24 pace.
Was that just bad pacing?
There was a pacemaker. And they went through 10K still on 2:25 pace. Okay. So what happened was always going to happen from that point on. But
And did you know that, Hayley, at that point?
No, I had no idea. The pace felt fast, but then you kind of think first part of London was downhill anyway. So we kind of thought, well, it'll settle. Mm-hmm. So Dan was waiting to start his race. He's probably better to tell you this part. And he had someone to tell him the 5K split.
Oh, so you were running London as well?
Yeah, I was just going off the championship start. And I just thought it would be easier way to manage my own nerves, just to run around. And so, yeah, I was sort of hanging on to the start, and someone gave me the 5K split from just the other side of the barrier. And I'm told I turned ashen at that point, which was probably reasonable, because obviously that was not the plan.
Thank you to MetPro for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. MetPro is a proven platform to help athletes and those looking to transform their bodies to reduce body weight, increase power, and optimize their metabolic rate to maintain energy and performance. Sounds like it could hit a lot of us, huh? At MetPro, they are not interested in guessing what is best for you and your body. They will use your data to identify the best nutrition and training strategy for you to maximize your potential and your performance. If this is something that you have been struggling with, you've been thinking about how you can really tweak your diet to get the most out of your running, to really go for that goal, go for that BQ, this may be what you are looking for. Running For Real listeners can receive a complimentary metabolic profiling assessment and a 30-minute consultation with a MetPro expert. You can claim this offer by heading to metpro.co/Tina. That's metpro.co/Tina. Now, one thing to know, your metabolism is constantly changing and adapting to the environment that you are in. Now, without identifying a starting point, it's actually really hard to determine the right strategy, which is why I know many of you talk to me about feeling like you are constantly eating less, you're not really taking in many more calories, yet you're still gaining weight, or you're still struggling to, you know, look the way that you want to look. Or, you know me, I'm not really about looking the way that you want to look, but more the way that you feel. You want to feel confident, feel good. Well, MetPro is a wonderful way of actually figuring out how to understand your metabolism. And if it has slowed down, getting it back to working correctly so that you can eat the right foods, you can eat enough food, and you can enjoy eating again. So go get that free 30-minute consultation with a MetPro expert. What do you have to lose? Go to metpro.co/Tina.
I just thought it would be easier way to manage my own nerves, just to run around. And so, yeah, I was sort of hanging on to the start, and someone gave me the 5K split from just the other side of the barrier. And I'm told I turned ashen at that point, which was probably reasonable, because obviously that was not the plan. But, you know, what can you do? Ultimately, you don't expect something like that to happen. It's a really challenging situation for someone with Hayley's lack of experience to be in. You know, far more experienced marathon runners went with that group and actually suffered even worse consequences than Hayley, although they were less spectacular. So it's difficult to sit here with too many regrets, really, because knowing what you knew before the race, you'd still make the same decision. She was in shape to run 2:28, 2:29, and we wanted to be first two. So given those two facts, that's what you try and do. And
so you wouldn't, even if you knew it was going to go out, do you think now you would have said to her, hang back?
I'd say run a step behind Tish Jones and then pass her on the mile. But but no one knew it was going to play out like that, did they? So, you know, it's that was a very unusual set of circumstances, I would say, for the pacing to be that far out of what people were anticipating. I mean, you know as well as anyone that going off at several minutes faster than predicted pace for the first 10K is not the ideal way to run a marathon.
No, absolutely not. So then, Hayley, you know, when did it kind of hit you? Like, you know, you said early on you kind of knew that there was, you know, it was downhill, and maybe, but there must have been a certain point where you were like, yeah, I'm way too tired at this point.
Yeah, I think it was probably just after 10K. I kind of thought to myself, the fatigue shouldn't be already be building. And then I kind of thought whether this is just a part of the marathon, because I have run through other marathons before. So I kind of thought the fatigue had just hit in a bit, or this was a bit of a bad patch, and thought I'll get out of it. And it never really did. And I think I kept thinking to myself that, oh, it'll get better. And then got to halfway and thought, this really doesn't feel any better. If anything, I probably feel worse. But I just kept thinking to myself, it would get better. So I think that was just what was spurring me on so much. And I think I got to mile 20 and genuinely was going up the slight inclines. I can't call them hills, but it was absolutely horrendous. And I kind of thought, if I just stop now, I don't think I'd even mind. It was that painful. But then going through all the tunnels and things, I said, oh, no one would know. And then I thought, no, I would. And it was just a constant battle with myself. It was a constant argument of, you need to stop, but I don't want to stop. The only thing I thought was, this is just sheer fatigue. And then, I even said, remember saying to Dan, I almost wished myself injured during that point, because it would be the only valid reason to stop. Because you never don't finish. So I kind of thought, that's the only thing that's going to actually be a valid point for me to stop. And regardless, my parents would be proud. And I kind of thought, just get to the end now. This, I knew the timer was gone, because I just felt everyone going past. And it just thought, just get to the end now, as long as you survive.
And were there any points where you did nearly kind of, you know, I mean, most of my races, I had a point of dropping out, and you've mentioned that a little bit, but were there any points where you were just really close to just walking and being like, you know, I can't do this. What does this matter? Like, I'll just try again, you know, especially with your lack of experience and not knowing, you know, not having been through this like hundreds of times at this point. Was there that point?
I think I got to mile 20 when we got to one of the tables, and my right leg actually buckled at that point. And I kind of thought, that's not normal. But then there was something in me that kind of thought, no, you know what? My legs have felt like this during a session before. It didn't get better, but I was actually able to withstand it. And I thought, also, what an opportunity to run. I said, the time's gone, but this is an opportunity to run with that level of fatigue, to know what it feels like. And we've kind of gone through the stages of, we try and replicate different parts of a race, and Dan's promised me that I'll never, ever feel like that again. Yeah. So
I can attest to that.
I've just got to get to the end, and it was a matter of sheer survival and turning onto them all. And
yeah. So when did it take the next step to where, you know, you said you can see out of one eye, which I have experienced. when did it kind of go to that next level?
I think when we turned just by St. James's Park.
Yeah.
We were going down the side of the park, and it was just a matter of, I don't even think my legs were going forwards. It felt like they were just going all over the place, and it was just constantly getting worse and worse. And I could barely hear the crowds. It was just, I was staring into oblivion, just trying to get to the finish. And it was, I still to this day, well, I almost didn't, but don't know how I actually did finish that race.
I eerily similar everything you're saying. And you know, as your legs started to buckle, those final few meters, you know, what were you saying to yourself? Like, just get across the line. What was going through your head when you knew, like, you know, when you're about to go down, like you can tell.
Yeah.
So what were you saying?
It almost happened in slow motion. I think my legs just kind of went, oh, we're going down. And I just hit the same. My legs were so numb at that point. I didn't even feel, my knees were so cut and badly bruised. But then, as I say, Dan and I joked a few days before, we saw a photo of dipping at the line. I said, don't dip at the line when your tags are on your feet. And I think there was something in the back of my mind that was thinking, just get your feet over.
Yeah, so you did swing your leg around, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think you meant that literally. But whatever Dan says goes. So.
And, you know, Dan, I want to hear what was going through your head as this was going on. But for Hayley, before we kind of wrap up with this, for someone listening who maybe is a recreational runner, club runner, just kind of enjoying their training, you know, does it kind of as a hobby, it's very hard, like I said earlier, to wrap your brain around why you would push yourself that far, why you would not just say, I'm going to back off. Like you said, you knew the time was gone. I know it's obviously just kind of you know, like you said, something in you. And I get that because I feel the same way. But can you try and put into words what it is that kind of made you push yourself that far?
Yeah, it's quite difficult to, like you say, put a few words onto it. But I just thought, I've not trained this hard for this many hours whilst working full time to give up and say there are sessions that we've gone through training where I say we have called it a day because it's just not happening and I feel like I was digging a hole. But I kind of thought, no, this is London Marathon. You're on the elite start. You've just got to do it. It almost wasn't an option to stop. Obviously, it did cross my mind thinking that that was an easy option, just to stop and call it quits, but I would never live it down. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought, we've had such a great week, such a great build up, and I kind of didn't want to end it by not finishing, because mm-hmm. you always think, what if mm-hmm. some miracle could have happened at mile 24 and I would have felt great. Mm-hmm. It didn't, but it could have also changed everything. And you also don't know where the people are in front. They could have dropped out. I could have been running in second position or first position, but because there was such big gaps between us,
yeah.
you don't know what it was. And I may have not got the time, but I could have also come second Brit and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Because say with the elite field, as you know, it's a very lonely race, and you do end up talking to yourself the whole way round anyway. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that mine was just don't stop. That's not an option.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one thing I will add to people listening, I think the actual harder part of this kind of situation is actually probably, and correct me, this is from my experience, between miles maybe 15 to like 22, because once you reach a certain point, you're not mm-hmm. even really present in your brain anymore. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of going through the motions. Your body's yeah. just kind of taken over, but it's those miles before that you kind of are keep yourself from freaking out. So once you mm-hmm. get to that point, there's nothing really anyone can do, because it's just like, I'm going to do this if it kills me. I remember thinking yeah. that I'm going to do this if it kills me, which is ridiculous to think that, but yeah. it's what goes through your brain. So yeah. I just wanted to like clarify that. And anything else to add before I go to Dan?
No, just saying that it all just sounds so reasonable at the time. And then yeah. you look back and think, how on earth did I do that to myself?
Yeah, for sure. And Dan, you knew she had this fast start. I would imagine it would be pretty hard to enjoy your race, kind of even deal with your nerves when you knew she'd started off that fast. You must have been wondering what is going to happen. Were you, did you have a phone? Were you checking, like, or did you not know anything till you got to the line? What was your situation?
I suppose confession time for me, because the first thing I thought when she went through in 17:07 at 5K was that this was going to be a good case study of my PhD, which I'm doing with one of your previous guests, Andy Lane. So
Andy Lane?
Lane?
Oh, you, Andy Lane. Yep.
Andy Lane. So mm-hmm. My whole PhD is about psychological interventions when you're in extreme fatigue. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, this is going to be a test of whether I've taught her well. And I was just sort of trying to get on with my own race. But obviously there's that bit where you come off Tower Bridge, turn right, and the women are running back the other way, just thinking, okay, there's Charlotte, okay. Right, there's Lily, and then I could see Hayley.
Oh, so you did get to see Hayley, okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't see him.
And I wish I hadn't. So that would have been about 35K. And yeah, that I was really, I almost stopped, jumped over the barrier and kind of wanted to just get to the finish from there to see, because I didn't think she was going to be in a good way. And
so
I thought,
she didn't look, even at that point, you could tell she was
in She situation. Looked better. and I kind of thought, no, she'll never forgive me. Look, just, get to the end yourself. And I had some mates out on the course, and they sort of, I ran past them about mile 20, by which time I was limping fairly badly on one leg myself. And they couldn't even look me in the eye, I don't think, to sort of tell me what had happened. So I was like, right, got 10K. I can't really run because I had this knackered Achilles. So I was thinking, what's the quickest way to get to the finish? Well, it's probably still just run on one leg. So I was just, as quickly as I could, got to the end. And then, and then was just trying to get to Hayley, basically, mm-hmm. at that point. But, yeah, it's horrible. I mean, obviously horrible for her, but, yeah, a horrible thing to sort of not know what's going on, really. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, difficult day.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Okay, and then, so after this race, we were carried off in a stretcher, which added to the drama of the whole thing. tell us about the media storm afterwards. I mean, just how crazy did it go? It was insane looking at it from my perspective, yeah. but for someone listening who doesn't know, tell us just how crazy it went.
I think viral kind of cuts it loosely. Mm-hmm. But I remember walking into local small supermarket on the Monday morning, so the day after the race, on the way to work, and seeing, just walking down one of the aisles and just glanced over at the newspapers and just saw my face all over the front of all of them and just thought, oh, wow, what just happened? So I rang Dan and said, can you please just go into the supermarket and just have a look that I'm not in some sort of dreamland? This is overtiredness, me going a little bit insane. And it was then from that point, everything just completely exploded. My phone was constantly nonstop ringing with newspapers, and it was, what on earth is happening right now? Mm-hmm. And say on Instagram, within 3 days, I'd gone from 5,000 followers to 13,500 followers, and kind of thought, really, this is actually happening? And none of it all sunk in. And then the BBC were in touch, and ITV, and it was kind of, this is crazy. And say my uncle was in Vietnam at the time, and he even said, you're on the face of the newspapers in here.
Wow.
And it was just insane. And say one of my mum's friends lives in Australia, and she sent a picture of the newspapers over there. And so I know it hit Canadian online newspapers, and it was just one every day there was something else. And I thought, this is really not the way I wanted to end yeah. London Marathon. It is what it is. And I think the only thing I can say is I'm so glad a positive message came out of it, as opposed to, why do people do this insane sport, being running yourself to a standstill? It can't be good for you, et cetera. But mm-hmm. What came out was what determination to get yourself to that finish line, even though everything wants to give up. And say even my primary school have been in touch to say they want to come and do a talk there. And it's just been the positivity that's come out. It's been overwhelming. And if I can inspire other people, obviously I'd quite like to do it in a way now of saying that you can achieve anything you put your mind to. You don't actually have to run yourself to a standstill to prove that. But it's made me even more determined now to just see what I can achieve when you pace a marathon right. And I've learned so much more than just running a much quicker time and qualifying. And it's taken a while to kind of see the positives come out of it. Mm-hmm. But I think finally kind of got somewhere there. And say if the worst day so far is still running a 3-minute PB, I can't really argue.
Oh yeah, if you can be in that much trouble and you still run yeah. that much faster. So and like we said, 33:59, was that right?
Yeah,
you know, it's still very fast, but it still puts you as one of the top runners in the UK. And and yeah, I mean, it was good that there was a positive message come out of it, because yeah, I think it could have easily gone the other way.
Yeah.
I have to say, I did feel a bit bad for Charlotte, like, you know,
yeah.
complete, you know, she yeah. did do well. And so I did feel bad for her. But at the same time, I was happy to see that you were getting, you know, kind of celebrated for kind of chasing something and sticking it out all the way to the end, even when it was going very wrong. All right. Yeah. So you mentioned you went back to work. We haven't even come across this part yet, that you actually work full time, as you did mention, mm-hmm. as an NHS nurse, National Health Service nurse. So tell us about, how did you fit your training in? Why did going back to work kind of the next day seem, you know, just a normal thing to do? Did your work send you home? Like, because things were too crazy? What? Tell us a bit about the working situation.
Yeah, so just because some of the radiographers will get quite mad, I'm a radiographer, not a nurse. But
oh, okay, sorry, I did get that from an article that was obviously wrong. A radiographer.
Absolutely fine. I'm not offended. So when I came into work on the Monday, my colleague actually said to me, she went, oh my gosh. I went, what? She went, I thought you were dead. I went, what? I said, I'm fine. And she went, but I saw you on the news. And I was like, yeah. I'm okay. She was like, do you not need to go home? And I said, no, I'm fine. I just need to pop down to one of the nurses because my knees are still bleeding. So I just need to get some proper dressings for them. And then she just kept saying, are you sure? Are you sure? I said, yeah, fine. I've got patients to see. I've got my clinic to do, and just carried on. And fortunately, the week didn't really pan out as planned because of, say, the amount of media attention that was going on. And I think on the Thursday, I said to my line manager, I said, I'm going to have to go home Is anyone able to cover this afternoon? I said, because I feel like I'm not being able to get anything done and not give my patients my full attention. So I say we took some time off just for that day, just to kind of get back on track. But it was just, it just felt like, well, it's work on Monday. It's mm-hmm. just because I've hit the headlines accidentally. It didn't really change the week. Mm-hmm. Well, it did, but I didn't mean it to.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned earlier with your work in general that you did most of your training in the evenings. You know, how did you find that just yourself with, it's quite hard to do a day's worth of work, just the, mm-hmm. the whole decision fatigue thing, having, you know, to do that and then go home and, you know, push yourself, train hard. How did you kind of get around that aspect of just the struggle mentally? Or did you just see that all as training?
So we train most days twice a day. So I'd be up at 5 a.m. before work and then I'd train again on the evening. But it kind of felt that was, it's just a hobby, really. It was kind of what I do in my own time is what I do for enjoyment. And some of the days I was so mentally exhausted, but I kept thinking, well, this is an added challenge mm-hmm. because if I'm mentally tired, then my body's not going to want to do it. I'm going to want to just, the amount of times I must have said to Dan mid-session, I just want to go home now. Like, and then I convinced myself, just do one more rep. And then after that rep, it was, well, we might as well finish it now. And it was a constant battle of just getting through some of the sessions because it just was, that was the option. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. And obviously some of the days it was, I can't physically finish this session. I remember one day I got on a treadmill and I set the pace to, I think it was slower than half marathon pace. And I couldn't run for 30 seconds without coming off. I must've attempted about 17 times, threw the towel on the floor and drove home. And it was just, it's just not happening. And the days, you know, where you are tired, there's a difference between it's not happening and it's just a little bit harder than it should be. Mm. And say, because we do train together most of the time, he can see whether it's just not happening or whether I'm just struggling, and he knows when to push me through a session and knows when to hold back. And it's kind of, we've learned so much in the last few months that there's just so much more to learn.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I want to dive into the mental thing a little bit. Dan, you mentioned that you're doing your PhD on performance psychology during fatigue, when fatigue, something like that.
Yeah.
Now, Hayley, from what I read of you, you used to have kind of panic attacks essentially before your races because you were so nervous. And now you're at the point where you know, genuinely have a bit of pressure on you and eyes on you. So how did you go from kind of having these panic attacks before to kind of being okay with being on the elite starting line of the London Marathon?
Yeah. So when Dan's laughing because...
okay is a relative term.
Okay.
Before I did the big half where I ran 71 in the build-up, I remember sitting on the coach to the start line and said to Dan very calmly and rationally, Dan, and he went, yeah, I think I'm having a panic attack. And he said, I don't think you are. No, I am right now. This is a panic attack. And I wasn't, it was just a matter of, I can't do this and the whole imposter syndrome. And I think the nerves are still there very much at the forefront, but I think now they've kind of changed a way to drive myself to, you've got this far. Don't give up now through some nerves. You've trained for this many months, this many nights, and you don't want to just come all this way to London to not get to the start line. And I do say during the build up to a race, the week of the race, I'm usually okay. But then it's the night before where you're sitting there with nothing to do but sit there. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's, oh no, I can't do this. I can't do this. And then the morning of the race, I tend to not really talk a lot and just try and zone myself out as much as I can. And I think the only way to get yourself better with nerves is to just to kind of put yourself in that situation and just get used to it, really. And I think I'd say everyone does have nerves. It's just how you use them to drive yourself forward.
Absolutely. And then what about within the race itself? You have talked in articles, and I was honored when you said my Nicole Detling episode was one you enjoyed.
Yeah.
So you've talked about using, you know, learning mental training tactics, and obviously Dan, that's an interest of his. So you've learned through that. But what are some of the things that did keep you going in London and other races, like the mental strategies you have found helpful?
Mm-hmm. So I say one of the biggest factors is how supportive and loving my family have been. And I always say to them that I run with you in my heart, whether you're there or not, like I know you are. And things like different mental strategies. Say we've gone through with Professor Andy Lane. He's taught us all the mental toolkit of just getting to the next lamppost, yeah. Counting your steps, which I can't do. I lose count. I'll get back to about 10. And then focusing on the person in front, using their legs to battle through. And yeah. It's just a constant readjustment of which strategy you're using at that time. And it's knowing that if that doesn't work, switch to something else. And it's almost just distraction, imagery, and just running through them. And in the tough sessions on an evening, it's a perfect time to practice all of those. And so we're getting this. I always say to Andy and Dan, which one can I try now? They've all stopped working.
Wasn't one of his things as well to put yourself in the feet of another elite? Is that his thing as well?
Yeah, that's one of his, yeah. He gets someone else's feet to run for you.
Yeah, I remember him saying about that, yeah. And Dan, what would you add? What have you noticed about Hayley? What have, tactics have you encouraged her? Have you seen kind of differences with?
Well, I think, there's two bits to it, I suppose. The pre-race stuff and the anxiety stuff and all that stuff, we've developed a bit of a shorthand for now, which is just, she says, I want to go home, I don't want to do it. I say, fine, let's go. And she goes, oh, no, I do want to do it. And that normally resolves that. But in terms of the actual race itself, I mean, it's a bit like I was saying before, that protective thing. You know, I know that she is capable of pushing herself, probably as far as I've seen anyone. And that has been whilst I've been trying to induce this in research conditions, So it's she's clearly got that ability anyway. And so it's more a matter of trying to reduce her perception of effort. So give her those sorts of strategies around imagery and rhythm and those sorts of things, which mean that she can actually relax at a point when she perhaps thinks she can't. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, that she reaches a point where she's throwing the kitchen sink at it mentally. And maybe that's not always necessary. Maybe you jump to that point a little bit too soon. And if you employ some of these strategies, you can actually, it goes from a 9 out of 10 back down to an 8 out of 10. And you can sustain that for a little bit longer. So it's just tweaks like that. I mean, the other bit is, and this is, Andy and I completely agree on this, don't go into it thinking it's going to be anything other than, hard. Yeah. You are there for it to be hard. You want it to be hard. If you come off, I'm sure you'd be the same. If you finished a marathon feeling really fresh, the first thought would be, how much faster could I have gone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a horrible feeling if you, if you've done that with a marathon in particular. Like kind of shorter distances, you can say, oh, I'll do another one soon. But a marathon, you're like, well, got to wait, 4 months.
So I guess we talk a lot around being at the point when it starts to bite and reframing that feeling from being, a negative of pain or it hurts or whatever to, well, this is an appropriate feeling. This is how hard I want to be working at this point because I'm fit enough to be able to sustain this level of intensity. Mm-hmm. And so it's about it being, just thinking of it as more an appropriate feeling than just something negative. Yep. Because it's the labels we give to things at the end of the day which define a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. That's so true. All right, we're going to just answer the final four questions here. Hayley, maybe you could start with a piece of advice you'd like to share for the listeners for life.
Yeah. So I kind of thought, I remember reading something once to say, live every day like it's your second chance. So would you go into that day doing it differently? Or would you just smile at that person if you could go back and think, what would you do differently?
That's good. I like that. That's really good. Dan, anything?
I would say surround yourself with good people.
That's very good and very true. All right, one person to follow on social media, each of you, and why? You're not allowed to obviously say each other.
No one else then. You?
Me? Well, I hope they're all following me already, so don't take the easy way out there. Give me someone else.
So I'd say probably Professor Andy Lane with the University of Wolverhampton, because the articles he posts and the videos he shares and things like that are so inspirational of mental strategies. And sure. He's done so much fantastic work that you kind of, all you want to do is sit there and read it and just make yourself mentally stronger. And I think I've overdone that.
No, well, that can only be a good thing. Andy tags me in something, I swear, like every other day. And so yeah. I get like these massive streams of things. And I'm like, what am I looking at? It's like random conversations. Sorry, what were you saying, Dan?
He does that to everyone. Yeah. He does a lot of people.
Okay, Dan, who would be your person? And you're allowed to say Andy.
I'm definitely not going to say Andy. He gets far too much publicity. And our S&C coach is desperate for me to say him. So I'm not going to say that either. I'm going to say Thoughts of Dog. Because
Thoughts
that
gives me.
Yeah, on Twitter. Because that is like a way to make yourself feel better about
okay.
life.
Okay. I had two guests on, Megan and David Roche. I'm not sure if you've heard of them. They're coaches and trail runners. They David, his account is called Adidas Stuff, and it's all about his dog and just living life in the moment. So it's pretty similar. I like that. All right, Hayley, how do you want to be remembered on this show other than the girl who crawled across the finish line?
Oh, but that's such a good one.
Well, if you want to be that, then you can be that. I thought we might want to step away from that.
Don't worry, I thought showing people that you don't have to have run your whole life from junior level to progress to elite level. It's all boils down to how much do you want it and how much you're willing to work for it.
So true. All right, Dan?
I guess I would say that something similar in the sense that I think you can get to the elite level without having to give up with something being enjoyable. Mm. And it's, you know, If being a runner is a hobby and a passion, then that doesn't exclude being really good and having, you know, the performance stuff in there as well. So mm-hmm. I would say that.
I like that. Cool. All right. You can each pick whether you want to give Hayley, I know you listen, so you might understand this one a bit more. I don't know if you listen, Dan, but a running for real moments. That's something only runners will understand, or what you tell yourself on the start line of a race. You can each pick which one you want to do.
You choose. I'll do the other one.
You do the running for real one then, okay. Just because I've listened to loads.
Okay. I think that for me, if I'm being honest about my own running, I would say that I still sometimes tie up my self-worth with how I perform in a race.
Yep.
And as much as I, you know, am teaching sports psychology and also learning from one of the best sports psychologists in the world, I still have that struggle, and it's really tough not to do that. I think, you know, when you invest so much time and energy into something, and it can become a strategy almost that you think you're going to perform better because of it, but it's not a healthy way to be. So, you know, don't judge your value based on a time on the clock.
Easy to say, not as hard to do, right?
Yeah,
we all know that. All right, and Hayley, what do you tell yourself on the start line?
It's simple. Get yourself from A to B as fast as you can.
That's one of my responses when people ask me, what time are you going to run? I'm like, as fast as I can. And that they don't like that.
So that yeah. is when people message him, so he's going to love this. When people message him saying, what's Hayley going to run tomorrow? And say if it was a 10K tomorrow, what would we run?
I would always just say she's going to run 10K, hopefully. That's it, yeah. I thought you were going to say for the start line one, I thought you were going to say cross the finish line vertical.
Oh, we've moved on.
I love that. All right, and as I somehow missed it, what are the goals now? Whoever wants to say that.
Well, you know what? Like, Tokyo would be really nice. Mm-hmm. So try and go to Tokyo. Hayley announced the other day that she's thinking about becoming a steeplechaser. So
yeah,
that might be, that's
is that
the sort
in
of thing.
The sun or the star?
Yeah, I know. But yeah, that might, so who knows? But yeah, just try and keep getting better, try and learn, and try and stay process based. But I mean, ultimately, it's good to be excited about things too.
Yeah,
and, you know,
for sure.
It'll be good to go to the Olympics. So I suppose we'll try and do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
And to stay happy and healthy.
Yeah, that's always the number one, isn't it? Well, Hayley, Dan, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story, being a role model to so many, and just kind of being honest and real with us. I appreciate both of you, and look forward to watching. I'm going to live through you for a while I'm stepped away, and enjoy seeing where it goes. So congrats on everything. I'm excited for the future.
No, thank you so much for having us. It's been brilliant.
My friends, if you have a minute and you could leave a review on your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or whatever else podcast player you use to listen to this podcast. Or if you would subscribe to this podcast, you will help me get out in front of new runners to make our tribe even bigger and even better. It might not seem like you as one person can make a difference, but really it helps a lot. And it shows me you appreciate the hard work I put in for those. Thank you so much. Well, what did you think? Her story was pretty amazing, huh? I can't believe how far someone could come in just such a short amount of time and the perspective she's got at this point. It seems so far like she's managed to dodge all of the rookie error mistakes that we as runners tend to make. And, you know, it's just wonderful to see how far she's come. And, you know, even that struggle with crossing the finish line crawling has only kind of brought her more kind of love and people supporting her. And I hope you will consider doing the same in the future. I'm definitely excited to see what happens with her as we move forward. Now, I am actually in England right now, enjoying a vacation with my family, which is really exciting. But I do have episodes for you the entire time while I am away. And I have some really exciting one coming. Next week, we have Peter Sagal, the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, an NPR podcast. He is very well known, has been requested many times by you guys, but I have struggled to get hold of him until my friend Tom Foreman introduced us. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this episode with Peter. He is funny, he is smart, he's just a wonderful human being, and I think you're going to enjoy that one. So if you don't already subscribe to the Running For Real podcast, be sure to go do that right now and go follow Hayley while you're at it. So thank you so much for tuning in today. Go get yourself some Athletic Greens, some Body Health, or give MetPro a try. We talked about that last week, and I hope you have been checking it out. Get your free consultation, remember. All right, thank you, my friends. Let's have a wonderful week.
Thanks for listening to the Running For Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.